Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We have a great show in store for you today. Today, I am joined by recording artist Petra Luna. Petra Luna is a professional musician by trade, but much more to her beloved fans and followers. She has become one of the matriarchs of her cause to fight child abuse, as well as one of the cause's most recognized faces. An exemplary survivor of all forms of abuse, she inspires thousands of people to unite in the name of her cause. She also encourages victims of abuse to seek help, justice, and recover through her music and nonprofit organization she calls the P. Luna Foundation. Coming up shortly, Petra Luna will join me in this male abusive awareness exclusive. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And also visit my blog, that's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Each week I do a segment called Moment of Reflections. It is intended to look at the current events, but taking a look back. This week's Moment of Reflection is the Bush tax cuts. In a story by the Washington Examiner, the Senate on Saturday rejected two Democratic plans to extend expiring Bush-era tax cuts to all but the nation's top earners. Now, in back-to-back votes held during a rare Saturday session, the Senate rejected in a 53-36 vote that the House passed previously. It was a version of the tax cut that would have extended the cuts only for individuals earning less than $200,000 annually, and for couples making $250,000 annually. Now, the Senate voted 53-37 to block a plan that would have extended the tax cuts to anyone earning less than $1 million a year. So what was on the table was kind of a variation of the tax code, legislation. One was looking just specifically at individuals earning $200,000 and couples making $250,000. And then the other one was for people that's earning $1 million a year. Both measures needed 60 votes to pass, but the GOP did not allow that to happen. After two failed votes, the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said the following: "It is the height of irresponsibility that in a time of economic hardship, the Republicans will block tax cuts for middle class families and small businesses in Nevada and across the country," Reid said. "Even worse is that they would do so in order to secure huge tax breaks for millionaires and CEOs who ship American jobs overseas." Now, in my segment called The Moment of Reflection, I want to kind of reflect back. So I'm neither going to voice my opinions about the legislation, but I want to remind the listeners to how it all started, and so that's how we're going to take a look back. Now, the economic policy of George Bush administration was characterized by a combination of tax cuts, expenditures of fighting two wars, and a free market ideology intended to de-emphasize the role of government in the private sector. He advocated the ownership society, premised on the concepts of individual accountability, less government, and the owning of property. During his first term, that is 2001 to 2004, he sought and obtained congressional approval for tax cuts, the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001, the Job Creation and Worker Assistance Act of 2002, and the Jobs and Growth Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2003. These acts decreased all tax rates, reduced the capital gains tax, increased the child tax credit, and eliminated the so-called marriage penalty, and are set to expire at the end of this month. The last 2 years of his presidency was characterized by the worsening subprime mortgage crisis, which resulted in dramatic government intervention to bail out damaged financial institutions and a weakening economy. The U.S. national debt grew significantly from 2001 to 2008. This is why so many people are really have their eyes on this particular situation, because the debt grew at a large rate, both in terms of dollars and relative to size of the gross domestic product, that's the GDP. Due to the combination of tax cuts and both wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, of course, budgeted spending over President Bush averaged 19.9% of the GDP. Now, between 2001 and 2003, the Bush administration instituted a federal tax cut for all taxpayers. Among other changes, the lowest income tax rate was lowered from 15% to 10%. So here's what all the hoopla about is about these rates that were lowered. And again, the tax rates were raised or was lowered for one tax bracket from 15% to 10%. The 27% rate went down to 25%. The 30% rate went down to 28%. The 35% rate went to 33%. And the top marginal tax rate went from 39.6% to 35%. Now, the tax cuts have been largely opposed by American economists, including the Bush administration's own Economic Advisement Council. In 2003, 450 economists, including Nobel Prize laureate, signed the economist statement opposing the Bush tax cuts, sent to President Bush stating the following, that these tax cuts will worsen the long-term budget outlook. Now, this is what Bush staff said back in 2003. These tax cuts will worsen the long-term budget outlook, will reduce the capacity of the government to finance Social Security and Medicare benefits, as well as investments in schools, health, infrastructure, and basic research, generate further inequalities in after-tax income. And, of course, the Bush administration has claimed, based on the concept of this thing called the Laffer Curve, that the tax cuts actually paid for themselves by generating enough extra revenue from additional economic growth to offset the lower taxation rates. However, income tax revenues in dollars terms did not regain their 2000 peak until 2006. So through the end of 2008, federal tax revenues relative to the GDP have yet to regain their 2000 peaks. So in all of this hoopla about extending the tax cuts is really going down from a relatively, you know, at the largest rate at 5%, somewhere around, you know, 2 or 3%. And so that particular money that's going to be held off will be will significantly reduce the deficit in terms of, you know, revenue generated by taxes. And so that's what the big hoopla is about. And of course, when you hear anything referring to the tax cuts, they're talking about the legislation that was passed under Bush. And so this week, of course, that legislation was not passed to extend the tax cuts for all Americans. And the Democrats have put in a component that was it continued to keep the tax cuts for individuals under $200,000 and for families for $250,000. And then they went out on a limb and says, okay, well, let's increase that amount to $1 million. And anybody making under $1 million would be afforded the opportunity to continue to keep their tax at the same rate. And anybody over $1 million would have to go on and go back to their rates that before Bush lowered them. And so, of course, that did not pass. So I would encourage you to go out, whatever side of this fence that you're on, to participate in the process and make sure that the people in Congress are doing their jobs. In other news, this is the last month that Congress will be in session, but there is still an important work to be done before lawmakers go home for the holidays. Two major items on the president's agenda. One is, of course, the rebuilding Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the other is passing the DREAM Act. And both are currently up for debate in the Senate, with votes to be expected very soon. Now, the DREAM Act will provide a path to citizenship for undocumented youth who work toward a college degree or serve in the military, helping those folks who make this country better through their service and their hard work. And some argue that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't do anything but discriminate against thousands of patriotic men and women. So no matter which side of the debate you're on, those are the two issues that are coming your way. And finally, I don't know if you heard this or not, but decades-old claims from African-American farmers and Native Americans that the government mistreated and swindled them out of billions of dollars can be finally settled starting Wednesday. President Obama is set to sign the bill authorizing payment for $4.6 billion, that's billion with a B, to settle claims that arose in the class action lawsuits. Many of you may know about the black farmers, as a lot of people called it, at the time this act was put on the table and the president actually signed. And he's going to be this week, coming up next week, he's actually going to do it in a ceremony. So the White House said that the president would sign the Claims Resolution Act of 2010, and he would make his remarks at the ceremony next week, but he did not offer anything. And the House passed the bill on Tuesday. Now, of course, I've been talking about all week on Facebook. I've been talking about it on Twitter. I've been tweeting about it. And all week I've been really looking at, really excited about what we're doing today. Our special segment today is on male abuse. Cook Enterprises, this is one of Cook Enterprises' current events with Patrick Cook, this internet talk radio show, in conjunction with the P. Luna Foundation, is raising awareness on an issue that is often seen by many as taboo. Now, I want you to take a moment to listen to this clip.
One is holding a picture of themselves at the age when they say they were first sexually abused. These courageous men are standing together to lift the veil of shame today, because what happened to them as young boys has profoundly affected who they have become as men.
I'm a husband.
I'm a son.
I'm a boyfriend.
I'm a grandfather of seven.
I work for child welfare.
I work for the federal government.
The sexual abuse started when I was
sexually assaulted at 16.
I was raped at the age of 14.
I was 6.
I was 12.
I was 7.
I was sexually abused my entire childhood until I was 18.
The topic is taboo, surrounded by stigma and shame. It's a silent and devastating epidemic with numbers that are really staggering. It's estimated that one in every six men has been molested as a child, one out of six.
I was molested by a member of my extended family.
I was molested by a family member.
By my landlord.
By several priests.
It was a neighbor.
It was a doctor.
It was my scoutmaster.
It was an award-winning teacher.
I was molested by my father.
Statistics show that 90% of child molesters target children they know. And the horrific side effects of childhood sexual abuse can last a lifetime.
Those men are at greater risk for many emotional problems, including depression, anxiety, problems in relationships with intimacy, problems with sexual dysfunction, problems with sexual orientation confusion, and increased risk for suicide as well. The shame that they feel is immense, and it really totally blocks their ability to talk about it, and they wind up keeping it a secret.
That was a powerful piece by Oprah. Now one can bring it to You know, when it comes to bringing a topic to the forefront, no one can do it like Oprah can. And I'm so glad that she raised awareness to this issue. In fact, it's an issue that Petra Luna has been talking about for quite some time. We now turn to our special guest today, Petra Luna. Petra Luna, welcome to the show.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Hi, thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. So tell our listeners a little bit about you and your very significant cause.
Well, I started in domestic violence several years ago. I was on the board of directors for a domestic violence charity. And then I, after a few years, I flipped to child abuse. And when I flipped to child abuse, I started to realize that the real problem needed to start at the root of the problem. And that is to try and catch young people, you know, before they, you know, become abusers. And, you know, to just try and help young people to break the cycle, because the cycle has to stop with, you know, somebody who could potentially become an abuser has to, you know, to stop and think, okay, well, maybe I'll get therapy instead of, you know, acting on urges and things like that. And that's kind of what we're trying to get to do. I mean, basically we want, you know, I'm not saying that all males that are abused become abusers, but there is some evidence of a pattern of a cycle, and what people witness or experience younger, they do. So, you know, but mostly we want to just encourage males to come out about this subject. It's time to start talking about it. It's not just an issue for females. And, you know, we can solve a lot of domestic violence, drug problems, a lot of problems if we deal with this issue. And this is the root of a lot of problems in our society.
Okay, so some may ask, and Petra, I know I've talked to you extensively about this issue, but some may ask, you know, why not get involved with, like, battered women or rape victims? You know, why male abuse?
Because this is my way of helping rape victims and battered women. I mean, this is how you help them. If you can stop somebody from becoming a wife beater,
mm-hmm.
then I've helped them. I'm going to the very origin of the problem. And, you know, I have faced, I did get an email from a very prominent male abuse organization that told me that, you know, that's maybe not the best way to put out my message, because I guess, you know, one reason why males don't want to come forward is because if they sit there and say, well, I was abused, you know, and I didn't realize this is my bad, and I apologize if my message came out the wrong way, but I didn't realize that if a guy comes forward and says, you know, I was sexually abused, that somebody would doubly, you know, point a finger and say, I don't want you around my kids because you were abused. And that's a confusion, and I need some guidance from men as I continue this to be able to get my message out and not offend, because, no, not all men that are abused will abuse, but I didn't realize as a female who's been sexually abused, I would never tell anybody, well, I was sexually abused extensively, but they would never think, well, I don't want them around my kids. But I never realized this is where I think I kind of went wrong on the whole situation, but I don't know how to really go about this and without trying to get to the origin of what makes somebody an abuser. And if I can get to the origin of what makes somebody an abuser in the proper way, which doesn't offend, I feel like I can help rape victims and domestic violence victims before that happens. Are you understanding? I'm sure you understand what I'm saying.
It makes a lot of sense. I can really appreciate that. You know, and also in the opening segment, I played a clip from Oprah's show on male abuse. In it, she cites that there is an estimate 1 out of 6 men has been molested as a child. And that means when you go to a restaurant or you're traveling down the highway or you're at the mall, 33% of those men you see have been molested. Now, that's staggering.
That's so millions and millions of people.
Exactly. So what type of effect do you think that is having on our society?
Well, I know the effect it has had on me as a female,
okay.
But I also have a brother and a partner who, you know, were victims and survivors of, you know, rape and incest. And I see how it torments them, and I see how you just, you know, especially with my brother, I couldn't understand what was wrong with him, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and it went on for years and years and years and years, what is wrong? And then finally, you know, he shared, but it was just
okay.
Like, wow, if he could have shared that earlier, he could have saved himself from years of torment.
Now, you talked about you have some experience, or you talking about your experiences. Are you talking about your experience related to your brother or your personal experience with the issue?
Well, my partner also.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And my brother. So I'm in a relationship with somebody who is a survivor of incest. And I have to, you know what I'm saying, I have to deal with that person on a day-to-day basis. And, they, you know, he has to deal with me because I've been sexually abused. So, you know, it kind of works in a strange way.
Right.
But, you know, I see how it's so easy for me as a female to come out and just talk about it. I'll tell the whole
right.
world. Yeah, I was raped. You know, but it's just,
mm-hmm.
it's not fair that it's so easy for me, maybe.
Right. Now, you talked about your partner. You have, now, has it had an effect on your relationship at all?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, he just closes down, and I don't know why. And there's other times where, you know, he's just not able to, you know, communicate in ways that I need him to, you know, if you know what I'm saying. And it's like, you know, I can't, but you have to be very patient and you know, but, you know, he's very brave and he's, you know, he's getting help, and I see how that's tremendously, you know, changing things. And, you know, it's the only way out is through. You have to get help. So, and
wow.
That.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today I'm joined by recording artist Petra Luna of the P. Luna Foundation. The P. Luna Foundation fights child abuse by creating innovative programs to educate, aid law enforcement, and build awareness about the growing epidemic of child abuse and exploitation. To join the conversation, call 323-580-5712. Once again, that number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via the Blog Talk Radio website, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101 and visit my blog. That's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Now, over the past several years, we've heard the term war on drugs, war on poverty, the war on terror, yet you've been out there often quoted as saying the war on abuse. Now, why do you call it a war on abuse?
Well, it's a war because the people who exploit children are,
mm-hmm.
It's basically organized crime.
Mm.
It's very profitable. I mean, you know, they sell children on the internet. You know what I'm saying? I mean, even if we wanted to take the criminal element out of it, the war element, the vicious element,
right.
We can't. Because we're tapping into their money when we do that. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Right,
so, you know, there's really no way. I mean, but think about this, too. In abuse, not just sexual, you got people dying
mm-hmm.
every day. You got people in the hospitalized every day from domestic violence, men and women. You got, you know, I mean, how do you describe genocide without saying that there's some sort of war going on?
Right, right, right.
It's going on inside of your home. But that's
mm-hmm.
still a war. It doesn't matter where the battlegrounds are. People are dying. People are being
right.
affected and destroyed every day. That is
mm-hmm.
violence. That is war.
Right.
That
is war.
I don't know how else to put that. I'm about the truth. And a lot of times, you know, people get quiet. They, you know, but the silence agrees.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to put it out there. And there's just no nice way to do it. And it is a war.
Right.
It's absolutely a war. Because it is a very dirty, horrible, violent but then again, for some profitable thing. And they will defend their profits with violence if necessary.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you have this website called helpforguys.org. That's H-E-L-P, the number four, guys, plural, .org. Talk to me a little bit about that. Now, how is it related to the P. Luna Foundation? You know, why did you start the site? Things of that nature.
Well, I wanted a site where guys could come, you know, and just, you know, I mean, the Internet is so broad and so vast, and sometimes when you want help, you just don't have the patience. You know, especially with men that get frustrated, I feel like, you know, because I have three brothers, so I kind of know a little bit about guys. But, you know, they get frustrated. They want help now. So
right.
If they go right to my website, they can find every organization that is on the map has contacted me and asked me to be on my listing, or I have located them and they're on my listing. You can find other, you know, you can find communities of male abuse victims. You can find just friends that have something in common with you on social networking sites other than organizations. But we have the top organizations in the world listed on our site, and you go right there and you can get all the help you need. All the help you could ever need is right there in one place. And that's, I wanted to make it convenient for guys, and they can, you know, they can quietly research the pages and research about their own type of abuse and what's going on with them, and you know, they don't have to do all the searching. I tried to make it easy, and that's why I created this site.
It's almost like a hub for all of the resources that one could need. They can just go to one location as opposed to surfing around the net to find all these resources. They can go to helpforguys.org and find that information.
It's a one-stop.
When I was out there, right, exactly. When I was out there, I was just perusing the website. I saw that there are 11 reasons why males don't disclose abuse. And I want to read some of them and kind of get your feedback on this, okay? Now, the first one says, a cultural bias maintains that males cannot be victims. Males are expected to be confident, knowledgeable, and aggressive. To be a victim means one is an inadequate male. Now, since that's number one, I'm assuming that this is probably the number one reason why we have so many cases, let me say it in another way. We have so many unreported cases of male abuse because of this particular issue here.
Well, actually, one aspect of abuse that, and I wanted to discuss it today, then you just tapped on that that point, and we can deal with this, is bullying. We're seeing how bullying is on the news and how vicious. And this is an aspect of male abuse that's actually getting a lot of attention. And, you know, the kids are coming forward and saying, look, I'm being bullied.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying? But I'm trying to reiterate on the number one cause.
Mm-hmm.
But the more people talk about it, the more that they're willing to report it. The more that this is why we spend a whole week talking about this thing.
Right. Now, the other two, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, the other two out here that it says, at number two and three, and then I'm going to play a video here. I want you to get your feedback as I do that. But it says, if the boy's body has responded sexually, he feels he is somehow responsible for the sexual abuse. Number three, male victims of sexual abuse struggle with issues of homosexuality, as most offenders are male. Their homophobia, plus their confusion and fear, encourage silence, not to mention the social stigma attached to homosexuality. I want to play this video, and I want to get you to respond.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard for me to look at that. It's hard for me to look at those pictures because I feel like I died as a child.
In addition to being regularly beaten by his father, Tyler says he was sexually abused, starting at 5 years old by a man across the street.
So I'm building a birdhouse, and, you know, he had his hands in my pants.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, what is this? And I felt my body betraying me because I felt, it's odd because I felt an erection at that age.
At that age.
That's all I remember about him, and the next person I remember was a nurse in the hospital. I had a the emergency room from school for something, and a male nurse comes in, and he was doing the same thing that this man was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I left myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the person, the man in the church, who, you know, used God and the Bible against me, you know, to say, to justify a lot of the things that were going on. It was so horrible. And that was the first time, my first sexual experience was with this man performing oral sex on me as a boy.
Tyler also talked about being raped by a friend's mother when he was just 10 years old. So how have you felt since that interview, releasing that in such a worldwide way?
I feel lighter.
Really?
I feel lighter, as if I took the weight of the world off my shoulders. And I'm hoping that in talking about it, that it's helping a lot of other men to be free, because there are so many of us who don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel a lot lighter.
So it's a couple of things that kind of came out of that. You know, number two here on the helpforguys.org site, it says, as if a boy's body had responded sexually. And so it seems like when Tyler had this experience happen to him, and it was kind of horrific. I can imagine that, you know, as a young man trying to have something like that happen to you, it's unimaginable. And so for him to be in that, kind of locked in that cage for so many years, you think, that has what are your thoughts about that?
Well, what I got from it is, you know, one, his body's responding, and what you said earlier about him, you know, about males being afraid of, you know, their sexual orientation. I'll deal with that first. I don't know. I've been around men my whole life. Like I said, I have three brothers, and, you know, what they always say is, you know, that brain works different than the brain in their head. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, men can get aroused when the wind blows right. You know, men can get, I mean, your body is going to respond to anything that, you know, and the difference between women is, you know, when they're raped, you know, they can get aroused, but you don't see
mm-hmm.
it. But
mm-hmm.
it's happening. But it doesn't mean that you want it. It's just
mm-hmm.
a response to a physical, you know, a physical, you know, connection that's being made willingly or unwillingly. It has nothing to do with their sexual orientation. And another thing, you know, if we could get people to come out of denial that people who are prominent people involved with their children in their communities, if we could get them to come out of denial and
mm-hmm.
not protect people, you know, like you raise a son and he grows up to be a prominent, you know, coach or something, but he's molesting kids, and you sit there and go, oh my God, my family's going to be destroyed and I can't say anything. It's like, but you know, if we could just get people to say, okay, you know what? That person is a criminal. That person everybody needs to acknowledge that this person has a problem and needs to be separated from our children. But people are selfish. They don't want to break up their family. They don't want to break up their community. They don't want to say it's their priest. They don't want to say it's their pastor because of their own selfishness and how they want their little world to have everything in place. Okay? You need to be, if you're a parent, I'm not a parent. I'm not able to have children. But if I was, I would be suspicious of every single person around my child. Because you have to be. You're not living in a beautiful world where everybody, you know, there are people that have dark urges, and you know,
right.
And that's just my, you know, take on what you said.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Tyler Perry mentioned the pastor, and I think you just did too. And now listening to it reminded me of Pastor Bishop Eddie Long's case. Now, by no stretch of the imagination am I trying to bash the bishop. You know, God will be the ultimate judge of him and his actions. But I want to read something that was in the ABC News report. It says, one of the four men who accused a Georgia megachurch pastor of coercing them into sex called the man, at the center of the controversy, a predator and a monster. Jamal Parrish, 23, told this TV station in Atlanta that Bishop Eddie Long, the leader of the New Birth Missionary Baptist Church, swept into his life and used him for a sex and moved on to younger prey. He says, I cannot get the sound of his voice out of my head. And I cannot forget the smell of his cologne. And I cannot forget the way he made me cry when I drove in his car on the way home, not able to take enough showers to get that smell off the, of that man's off my body. He said this. You know, I talked about this on my show several weeks ago, and some of the comments that came out of that was that it was the young man's fault as opposed to you know, allegedly the bishop's fault. What are your thoughts about that? It was the boy's fault.
I think a child is a child. And a child is going to develop, you know, they're going to develop their bodies. And, you know, and it's beautiful and it's magical, but it's still theirs. And us as adults need to say, you know what, that person is not, even if they say yes and consent, they're not old enough to consent. You are not exempt of your crime of abusing children just because the child says that it's okay. You know what I'm saying? They have the capacity to make that decision. And as far as flashbacks, anybody who's been abused in any sort of way can be triggered. And yeah, I mean, I can still have flashbacks and see things that have happened to me and the smells and the sounds. And it never goes away, but you can obtain skills to deal with it better.
Now, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today, I'm joined by recording artist Petra Luna of the P. Luna Foundation. The P. Luna Foundation fights child abuse by creating innovative programs to educate, aid law enforcement, and build awareness about the growing epidemic of child abuse and exploitation. To join the conversation, call 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those that are you listening via the Blog Talk Radio website, leave your comments. Click on the follow button or follow me on Twitter. That's at TaylorMade101. Also visit my blog, and that's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. It's TAILOR Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. Now, I want to continue going down this list here about some other things. You can comment on several of these. Now, it says number four here says that if a boy receives money for sex, he is less likely to be perceived as a victim. Now, for a young man, and this is the language that's kind of shocking here. He said if a boy, not a man, but a boy, meaning a child, receives money for sex, he is less likely to be received as a victim. Number five, if a boy has a homosexual orientation, he is often blamed for the seduction of the older male instead of being acknowledged as legitimate victim of sexual abuse. Again, I'm reading the top 11 issues from the helpforguys.org website. That is H-E-L-P, number four, guys, plural, .org. Number six, molestation by an older female is often viewed positively as a kind of initiation rite into manhood. Cultural pressures encourage participation while denying feelings. So, Petra, do you believe that if a young man, I mean, there are many cases where they were in the news about teachers having sex with these young boys. Do you think that's a form of male abuse?
Ooh, you're going to get me started on females abusing males. Well, you know, the boy, obviously, as we said, you know, is not old enough to consent because, not just because, you know, I mean, he's like, oh, I was an older woman, oh, this is great. But what happens if that woman gets pregnant? His life is over. He doesn't carry the child. But what happens to that boy when that woman gets pregnant? How is that not going to destroy his life?
Right.
I mean, if he's a moral kid, he's going to feel like, well, now I got to go to work. I can't go and pursue my dreams and go to college and do everything. I got to go work and say, you know. And this woman knew exactly what she was doing.
Right.
You know?
In just a few minutes, we will have another very special guest joining the show from Australia. Her name is Lisa. She's the owner of Power of Mind, a private online counseling service. So I have a couple more I'm going to read, and then we're going to invite Lisa to the show, Petra, and then we're going to talk with our private online counselor, and hopefully we can get a few people to call in. Number 7 says that male victims of sexual abuse, more than female victims, may fear loss of freedom and independence of sexual abuse should be made public. Number 8, fear of reprisals from the offender plays a role in underreporting. Number 9, when boys are victimized, they tend to be blamed more for their abuse and are viewed as less in need of care or support. Number 10, boys fear negative judgment by family and friends. And number 11, embarrassment and or confusion prevent males of sexual abuse from disclosing. Again, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today I'm joined by recording artist Petra Luna and also Lisa of the Power of Mind. To join the conversation, call 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. All right, we're joined by Lisa. Lisa from Power of the Mind. Welcome to the show.
Is she there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hey, Lisa. Lisa from Australia has joined us. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Now, Lisa, tell our listeners a little bit about you and the services that you offer.
Well, I run Power of Mind online counseling service, and you can see from Petra's helpforguys.org website, I've got a video on there that explains a bit about what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically I offer counseling through Skype, through text chat, and through email. So there are... It's a very private way that anyone, especially males, can come online and have a chat and talk about what they're going through in a private way.
Wonderful. Now, I was reading a book by John F. Longaris, and it was entitled Human Behavior in the Social Environment. In it, he writes, "It is not enough merely to observe and describe social conditions and interactions. They must be looked at critically and analytically with a view to identifying problems and solving them." So, Lisa, my question for you is, what do you see as a central problem, and what are some of the solutions for male abuse?
Well, the problem is, like Petra was saying and Oprah discussed, that there is this stigma and shame attached, where males feel they can't talk about it. So, and that's really the problem today. And a lot of people believe therapy and counselling is face-to-face, and they have to do that, talk to somebody in person, and that's where, you know, the shame and the embarrassment come into it. And that's where these services online, such as Power of Mind, really help, where they can do it, you know, the privacy and the confidentiality without that stigma there that
right.
comes out.
You know, for the most part, we've talked about sexual abuse and exploitation. What are the other types of abuse, male abuse, that do you find in your line of work? You know, we talked about, you know, maybe rape or something along those lines, but obviously there are other things that are considered male abuse. What are those, and tell us a little bit about them.
Oh, well, there are lots of things. You know, there is the domestic violence as well. It's not only women that are victims of domestic violence, but a lot of the time it's ignored, the male part of that. You know, that males are victims too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and even police don't even know, when they call the police, a lot of times the police don't take them seriously, and I've heard countless.
That's right. I have had experience with that too. That's right. Most of the time don't even come forward because, you know, the men are usually seen as the perpetrators, not the women. The women are always known as the victim.
So what is a man to do? You know, I'm here. Me and my spouse have an argument. She throws a chair at me. She knocks me down. And instead of me retaliating, I call the police. And if they do that, what am I to do as a man? What defense do I have at that point? Lisa Petrie?
Well, I think that, you know, whether you're a male or a female victim of domestic violence, I mean, being a woman, if a man threw a chair at me, my red flag would go up. I would say to myself, this person is prone to violence. This person could potentially kill me.
That's right.
Just turn on oxygen channel, snap. You see women killing their mates all the time, killing their husbands. It happened every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't hesitate to call the police about that.
Mm-hmm.
I would get away from that person. I would end that relationship because they are prone to violence, and it's not going to get better unless they get serious help, and that's not likely unless they want to change. That's my opinion.
Okay. Now, Lisa, you know, do you see situations where abuse is cyclical? And what I mean by that is, you know, because it happened to an individual when they were young, and now, Petra, we talked about this a little bit early on, of the fact that, you know, it's not the case in all cases, but is there a psychological effect when a person is being abused that he's more prone or the probability is higher for that person is being the actual culprit when he's older?
Yes, you know, there is a lot of research into it, and the statistics show that that is the case, but a lot of the clients that I've had and that I see, they want to get help, and, you know, they break down, and then they want to help, so they don't follow that path, so they don't follow that cycle, they want to break free of that. But, you know, they're struggling to know how, and that's where the therapy really comes into it. Their anger, their fear, their helplessness all comes, you know, comes to that breakdown point. And that's, you know, we're talking about it, and the different techniques really help for them to overcome that and to get rid of that guilt and the self-blame and to really try and build their life around that. To overcome it.
Are there phases of recovery? Are there, you know, is there like, you know, after you, you know, you come to you, what, you know, the phases, if you will, that one would have to go through in order to kind of work themselves out of that situation?
Well, basically, it just takes a lot of time, and it's not really something that somebody can just overcome just like that. It's something they're going to be dealing with really for their whole life. And mm-hmm. that's where the therapy and the counseling really helps. It's just somebody outside their circle that they can talk to freely and say what's happening to them and what has happened to them.
Okay, so Lisa, what's a typical...
You know, they've been silent their whole life, so they really just need to talk and to let it out.
Right. Okay.
I was just going to say it's very hard to find that support network.
Okay. I was going to ask, what's a typical scenario where, you know, one has been abused and then they need to get in contact with you and use your services? What are the steps that they would need to take in order to get those services?
Yeah, well, not difficult. I've got the website. It's powerofmind.com.au, and on their list, my contact details. I have the email and a contact form on the site that they can post any queries or a session time they would like to have. And I'm able to reply to them pretty much straight away, and we can work out a time just basically to start a session, to organize a session time, and we can have it online, whether that's one-on-one individual counseling through Skype or text chat, or group counseling. So young boys and young men that would like to log in and chat with others who have also suffered abuse and sexual abuse, and that way they're able to support each other with my help in the group as well, to really let out their feelings and their thoughts and concerns and what they're going through. And that link is also on my website, powerofmind.com.au.
Petra?
This is the year, I mean, my organization is old enough to where we're going to, you know, and you just, you know, you're a consultant, business consultant. You've been giving me ideas on, you know, getting my grant writing going. And finally, I've got a real something with teeth to ask for donations. I want to pay this lady her hourly wage at a discount so that underprivileged boys in the middle of the night, because she's in Australia, you got to remember, she's
right,
in Australia.
That's right. Yep.
In the middle of the night in the U.S.
Right.
So we want to pay her a discounted hourly rate to let underprivileged boys have a group session. And I want to get it every week. And that's what I'm going to start driving for my grant, start driving for donations in order to get.
Okay, so Petra, how can people donate today? If, you know, all of the millions of listeners out there and across the United States and across the world and Australia and across the seas here, how can they donate right now? They know that there's an issue. It's an issue affecting somebody in their life. How can they get the information from you or get the money to you in order to support this cause?
You go to helpforguys.org and click on donate. You go to plunafoundation.org and call me on the phone. I got a phone.
Okay.
I got a cell phone just for my company, and it's sitting here waiting to ring. You know,
what's the number?
You know, I'm saying, and you know what? A lot of men are like, well, I don't know. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, but you know what? Send me an email and let me know what company you work for that gives out sponsored grants. If you work for Target, send me the link to get a grant for Target.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that Target will support this cause, you know, that's I'm getting going on the grant writing thing, and that's my real, you know, goal for this year. And thank you for your advice on getting some grants and stuff and getting things started. So, you know, help for guys, click donate. It's PayPal. It's totally risk-free, and you can, you know, donate any way you can. Or just there's
okay,
an address of the help, the plunafoundation.org is an address. Drop it in the mail.
Right. You also mentioned your phone number that for your company that they can call. What's that number?
Oh, great. Now you're putting me on the spot. I don't have it right in your face here.
Well, when you get it, at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a few minutes to kind of, you know, give some final comments. So you have an opportunity at that time to give all the information you want to all of the listening audience out there so they can make sure they can get in contact with you. Lisa, I do have one more question. Now, in many cases, when we talk about abuse, in the next breath, we talk about prevention strategies. Now, are there any prevention strategies or techniques that would help lessen the amount of men being victimized? Or do you have any research done in that area?
I think the best thing is really just to talk to somebody, anybody, about what's going on. Like a friend, somebody you can kind of trust and write down your thoughts and your feelings and what's going on. And that way it's getting that out there and it's releasing it. And I think that is what is really going to help.
Wonderful.
Petra, do you agree?
You know, in many cases, I find that before something happens, right, and you know, people have kind of worked themselves up to it. It's not the case where, you know, one day they're having an interaction with a child and then the next day that they are doing some inappropriate behavior. You know, when I was researching for the show, I found out that in some research talks about how people will, you know, befriend their victims over an extended period of time, and how, and I think it also was an Oprah show, how most of the people that were victimized were people that they knew. So, I mean, you mentioned the fact that they should be able to, you know, come tell somebody, but, you know, what are your thoughts about, you know, recognizing that, you know, that behavior before it all actually happens?
Yeah, that is a tough one. It's up, really, it's the individual. Everybody is different. So, and when it is happening, it is hard to kind of recognize what is going on then. But from my experience and from clients that I have counseled, there comes a point when they do just want to release everything and just telling somebody, talking to somebody is what helps. That's really what helps them.
Okay. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Today I'm joined by recording artist Petra Luna of the P. Luna Foundation and Lisa from The Power of Mind. The P. Luna Foundation fights child abuse by creating innovative programs to educate, aid law enforcement, and build awareness about the growing epidemic of child abuse and exploitation. And with respect to the Power of Mind, the Power of Mind is a private online counseling service that helps individuals of all ages, of any culture, and of any status to be helped, guided, and supported through counseling. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those that of you that are listening via the Blog Talk Radio website, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. You can also visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Now, we're wrapping up the show. We only have a few more minutes remaining here. And, Lisa, I want to go ahead and give you a few moments to talk a little bit more about your business and how people can contact you.
Yeah, so I just want to let everyone know that I work from a person-centered humanistic approach, and I use cognitive behavioral therapy, and I really believe that online counseling can benefit those many people that are suffering out there. And I'd like to remind.
Hello?
I think she got disconnected, Petra. The call got dropped. We only have a few more minutes remaining for the show. You want to take an opportunity to tell the people about your what you're doing?
You can go to helperguides.org and you can find her video and her link and everything. My organization's phone number, I was like, it's not on the top of my head, and I'm sitting here in that cell phone going, ugh. So it's area code 818-300-2052. Again, 818-300-2052. Call me, send me a donation, help me get some underprivileged boys, you know, the help they need. And, you know, I'm really sorry that we couldn't get any abused boys to call in, because I had quite a few tell me that they were going to try and conjure up the nerve to do it. But, you know,
right,
we just keep talking about it, and hopefully they'll come forward and start talking, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on today. I think this is a great cause.
No, thank you for taking the initiative to address this, and, you know, having the courage to bring this forward. Thank you.
It is my pleasure. Anytime that people are doing great things like you, Petra, it is my pleasure to facilitate that. And at any time, I think we should do this as an annual event. And I'll be more than happy for you to call in every year during this time, and we can continue to move and move this thing forward.
Male Abuse Awareness Week is every December 1st through 8th.
Right.
So mark the calendar. Okay. That's when we do it.
Okay. So please join us next week as we take a look at the current events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. Don't forget to visit my site, visit the blog site at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. Until next time, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook.